So we are holding in Per Gimel. I noticed we did exactly with Tzumtzum, exactly one Perek yesterday, so we have to make sure that we keep the pace going. So we stick to our goals here. But we're still dealing in Per Gimel with the halachas of Kriya Shema, which we'll finish today. I think we'll quick right over there. And we explained, we're still dealing with the ideas of Osik the Mitzvah, Patim and the Mitzvah. If you're involved in one Mitzvah, Middle Rice, and you're exempt from a second one. And we're dealing with a case now of bearing a mace. Now, to give tanchumen, to give consolation in bearing mace, these are mitzvahs, actually mitzvah doraisa, nitum avelim, and therefore, if you're involved in that mitzvah, you're going to be pasur from the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So now, if you remember yesterday, we said that this mishnah is dealing with it when the custom was that after the avelim buried their mace, they would walk from the cavern, from the grave, and there would be two rows of the consolers standing there. And those rows are called a shura. Of course, you can imagine the shura can get very deep. There's a lot of people. And the question will be, who is able to fill the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim, because their face is close enough to see the mourners, and who's in the back of the pile, so no one can see them anyway. That's a mishnah here.
Just to clarify, the picture in the book, the picture in the Sefer yesterday, showed like three or four rows on either side of the person in the veils. Mm-hmm. And as I understand, maybe the people in the first two rows on this side and the first two rows on this side may be pointer. But the third, fourth row...
Yeah, we'll discuss it.
Okay, so... I'm trying to. You said.
Let me say
two,
it. Then,
you said two on rows. Either side, two rows. But the picture showed like four rows or more.
I meant two masses of people, one on either side of the mourners. That could be X rows deep.
Okay, right. There.
But the point is, there's like parting of the Red Sea. There's a part in the middle of the throng of people, and the mourners pass in between. So it says Kav. Now inside Mishnah Per Gimel Mishnah Beis Kavru SMAs. Once they have buried the mace of that person, the chazru, and now they're on the way back. These are the consolers, ambiguous here, but these are the consolers who are now on the way back towards standing in the shura. Im yecholim lahaschil, if they're able to start the ligmor and also finish, this is the pasha's, even the first pasuk, the first parsha, ad shlo yigiu l'shura, you know, on their way, before they actually reach the shura, because once they get to the shura, they have a new mitzvah upon them. So if they're, you know, on the walking from the kever to the shura, the crowd there, yaschilu, then they should start. V'im lad, if it's not enough time to say, let's say, the first parsha of Kriya Shema, or even the first pasuk, then lo yaschilu, they're patur, they shouldn't start. Now, once they're in the crowd, so not everyone's, of course, exempt from the mitzvah, because not everyone can fulfill the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim actively. Because if you're deep in the back, you can't see them. You can't express anything to them, the mourners. So, ha'omdim b'shura, those who are standing in the shura now, ha'panimim, if they're on the inside, i.e. they can see the face of the mourner, peturim, that they're exempt from Kriya Shema because they're involved in the mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. V'ha'chitzonim, those who are on the outer edges of this, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth row deep, they can't see the face anymore of the mourners. They're chayavim. They should say Kriya Shema to themselves on the side, the mitzvah d'oraisa. Okay. Mishnah Gimel. We're now dealing with the peturim of Kriya Shema. I'll say just outside here. Everyone knows that women are exempt from mitzvahs aseh shehazman grama, positive bound mitzvahs that are time bound. Everyone makes a big stink. I think women are left out of so much. The truth is, there are a grand total of eight mitzvahs aser shezman grama, not more than that, only eight. The Rambam says it's a Doma there and the mitzvahs. And ironically, five out of eight women do anyways, with the bracha most of the time for Ashkenazi. So it's what are they? We're going to play a game here. The eight mitzvahs aser shezman grama, the positive time bound mitzvahs are?
Shema.
Good.
Arminim.
Good. Lula, very good.
Shofar,
Tefillin, which is actually two, Shal Yad and Shal Rosh,
Tzitzis,
Sukkah, and
Seder.
No, they're Chayav and Seder, which is not it.
What about eating matzah?
They're also chayvim matzah. That's connected to
their five. Sfiras HaOmer.
Very good. Sfiras HaOmer. That's it. There are only eight. And of those eight, five of them, Sfiras HaOmer, Kriyishma, Lulav, Sukkah, and Shofar, they do anyways with the bracha, right? They don't, women aren't known to put on tzitzis today, and the Shiyad and the Shal Rosh, that they don't put on. There are three mitzvahs, the whole thing's a big thing. The truth is, in all fairness, there are six more mitzvahs, the Doraisa, that women don't do, for reasons other than, you know, they're time bound, for whatever reasons.
A lot of women wear talises also.
Okay, there you go. There you go. So, yeah, that's it. So women are exempt from Kriya Shema for that reason. Avadim, when we talk Avadim again, usually we're talking about an Eved Kanani, a non-Jewish slave who's like a quasi-Jew, like we explained yesterday. Their status, again, is they're obligated basically the same as women. So if a woman is obligated, they're obligated, and the ones the women are exempt from, those mitzvahs, also an Eved is potter from. And a katan, of course, a child, halachically, a katan is, there's two, from Midoraita, there are two criteria to define someone as being a major or a minor in Jewish law. For a boy, it'll be 13 years old in one day, bar mitzvah, of course. And also they have to bring signs, physical signs of not just chronological age, but also biological maturity, which means bringing two pubic hairs. So that's what a boy needs, both of those, to be chayav midoraisa. And a girl, the same story, but she's going to be 12 years old in one day. And one day just means if she's born on the 5th of Tammuz, it means the next 5th of Tammuz, right? Because of the 4th. So Nashim, now inside the Mishnah here, Nashim Avadim Katanim, they're all Pturim, Vikriyishma, like we explained, Umina Tfilin, also Tfilin. The big Chiddush here is going to be with the children. Right? Well, I'll go say in a second. Right? So they're exempt from those two mitzvahs. V'chayavim, however, B'tfilah of Mezuzah V'erchas HaMazon. Each thing by itself now. Kriyishma, we explain why the women and the slaves are exempt. Children, interesting. You get a tremendous yesod, I think, out of the Rav here in terms of educational philosophy. If you look at the Rav inside, he says, why is it cut then? He says, we have a principle, I should speak out, that a child, from the time they have the age of understanding enough to know what they're doing, to be educated in hergel, to know, to be accustomed, so they reach the age of kot chinuch. And at that point, you have to teach them to do the actions, even though they're not obligated in midoraisa. You have to train them. So your child sleeps in the sukkah, whatever it'll be, when he's old enough to do it. So obviously, kriyishma, a child. I mean, my 2-year-old says kriyishma on mitzvah already. I'm like, really, all right. So what's the big deal, right? And yet they're pater. An amazing reason why. I look at the Rav. This is mine, frankly, but I think I'm right, anyways. The Rav says, "Kanim, if you cut in shigila chinuch, even a child that's reached the age of chinuch, lo yitilu al aviv lechancho v'kriyishma. It's the burden, the obligation to teach a child to say kriyishma isn't on the father yet. Why? Lefi she'enu matzui tamud etzlo ba'onas kriyishma, because the father just isn't always tamid. He isn't always around when it's kriyishma time. You know, he's out in shul and the minyan. He's missed, not around early enough morning for the kid to do it." Which is an amazing insight. What's the insight? So let him teach him when he's around. The answer is that's not chinuch. The whole point of chinuch is hergel, teaching a child, and it's consistency. If you can't be consistent, you're better off not starting. That's Joel Padwood speaking, but I think it's poshut here otherwise. So that's an amazing. You can't half teach a child. And a corollary, yeah.
Maybe this implies that the woman should be doing chinuch while the husband's out learning and working.
She isn't mufid. The important point you're bringing up here, Daniel, the obligation for chinuch on your children is squarely on your shoulders only. You're the daddy, you're obligated, not the wife. Your wife's off the hook. It's your burden. Hopefully they shame, maybe she'll be no sub'ol and chavera, she'll help you out, but the burden is yours to teach your child only. And tefillin, it's really a corollary, I think, another tremendous educational insight. Why are they exempt? Because mishum stam katan eni yodei lishmor tefillin shalei yafiach b'hem. There's a law that it's not allowed to let out gas, flatulence, when you're wearing a tefillin. And we don't think children can do it. Children aren't in enough control of their bodies that they shouldn't do it on accident. It tells you two things. First of all, accidents, if you're going to have accidents already made, it's not worth doing in the first place. If you see that elsewhere, it might be a sort of pushing off, you know, shofar on Rosh Hashanah and so on. We were afraid that things got eventually go wrong. But more than that, you see that if it's about trading, this is again Joel Padot speaking, but I think it's also Pasha. We don't say, well, let him try, what's the big deal, it's just a child. We don't say that. We say if the child can't do physical action right, better off he doesn't do it at all, or he's trained wrong. Otherwise, so what? It's a child. Like, what, the tefillin don't really mind, so to speak. It's pogay and they're covered, they're just tefillin. The child makes an accident. We say no. If a child can't do whatever it is for enough, then we say we don't try to do it at all. You see that by Yom Kippur, for example. We don't make them fast, they don't get good. Let them not wear shoes, because everyone can not wear shoes, etc. Okay? Yeah, and now, the chayavin, they're all obligated, women and avodah, the tefillah, to pray, which admits the pashas, it's a mitzvah, right? It's according to the Rambam to do tefillah, Shmon Esrei. The actual Shmon Esrei itself is the Rabbanan, but either way, even if it's a Doraisa, it's not time bound. You have to pray every day, so that's not time bound, and women have to do it. Uv mezuzah, because you might have thought it's connected to tefillin for scriptural reasons. Uv virchas mazon, and also in benching. Benching is a mitzvah Doraisa, and it's not time bound, you only have to bench when you eat. So women have to bench, and avodim. There is a big question if women are obligated to bench midoraisa midorabanan, because the pasuk says, "V'chalta v'savata v'rachta," you'll eat and be satisfied and you'll bench. But then it also says, "Aha'arta tova shenasamach," on the good land that you were given. And women weren't given a portion of the land, right? They come, you know, they piggyback on with their husbands. So the question is, and benching, of course, includes both of those, among other things. So since women don't have a chelik, it's a question to the end. If women are mechayven, benching midoraisa midorabanan, the nafkamin, I guess, would be if they're going to be motzi their husband. If they can be, okay. Either way, they're chayav for sure midorabanan to bench.
When you say mezuzah, does that mean that like a single woman lives on her, she has to put a mezuzah?
That's right.
Okay.
Or if, I don't know, if her husband is remiss in putting it up.
Oh, I just didn't know what it meant with the
mezuzah. Yeah. She has to have a mezuzah on her house. End of story. Yeah. I guess a very likely case in the real world is a balas tshuva. Living with their parents and have mezuzah, she's a thief at the bottom, doesn't put it up on their door, if she's living there, or her door. Okay. Mishnah Dalet. Okay, Hagdama here. There's a famous Takanas Ezra. And Ezra, who was Talmud Anshei Knesset Gedolah, so that the Talmud Chacham, he was afraid there, the lashon of the Gemara is that they'd be with their wives like chickens, like roosters, and I excessive amount of marital relation, that he wanted to make an impediment, a disincentive to that, so he said, if you have a seminal emission, you have to go to the mikvah before you can, let's say, be involved in learning. The machlok, we'll see in a second of the time what it covers, but Kriya Shema will be included in that, presumably. You're not allowed to, you have to do the mikvah before you daven and learn and say Shema and so on. So what happens if a person is a Baal, and so that's called a Baal Keri. Someone who's had the seminal emission, that's called Keri, seminal emission. It means either on purpose or an accident. And once the person has had that, he has to go to the mikvah before going to say Shema and Davin. So what happens if the person is a Baal Keri? So the Mishnah says, the halach l'maitz, by the way, is where, you know, it's like one of those, also one of the issues lots of people are strict for, but the bottom line is, to my understanding, even in Eretz Yisrael, the prevailing minhag is not to be strict for it, but many, many, many are. Okay, so Me'ikra Din, we said it's actually a big insight. You see, there's a principle you see at the end of Bava Basra that if there's a takana made that the tzibur can't stand up to, it's too much of a headache, too much of a hassle, so then the takana, the rabbinic enactment, falls away. Made the insight. So this was too much for people to handle. It's sort of ironic that lots of people go to the mikveh every day, anyways now. Not for now. Either way, so a person who's had a seminal emission is called a Baal Keri, and the Mishnah inside says, Mishnah Dalet, a Baal Keri, he's Maharher Balibo. He should, well, now translated as, he should think the words of Shema in his heart. Actually, he shouldn't say them, but at least he should think them. There's a Machlokas in the Gemara, Ravina and Rav Chisda, I believe, if Hirhur, if thinking is as good as Dibur, speaking. It's the same, in other words, if he's really saying Shema in his Yotzi, he just is not saying the words because of Takanas Ezra, or no, just you shouldn't sit around and do nothing. Everyone else is being makabel of Olmuch Hashemayim, so you should think it too, even though you're not makabel your mitzvah at all. Yeah. Either way, he should say that. That's midoraisa. You should do that. Something. The enu mavarach, but he shouldn't say the brachas on Kriya Shema, which are just midorabanan, lo lefaneha, either the one before, lo laachrev, nor the ones after. Or
she should be maharem as well.
Even this reading now is even not maharem, nothing, because it's easier to read if you think of here or zebra or dami. Because then, if you think of here, who are thinking is as good as speaking, that's also off limits. We say that the Chazal didn't go so far, Ezra didn't go so far to say mevatel mitzvah creation altogether. Just think about it. But yes, the pashtus is. We'll see in a second. The Gra doesn't like it, like that. But the pashtus reading is like the Bavli, is that yeah, you don't even nothing. You're off, and you'll see. Look, it gets even more pronounced in the next sefer here. Val hamazon. What about eating? Eating bread. Mevarach la'acharav. You should bench. The pashas behirhor. You should think the benching in your head. Venum varach lapana, but say nothing before, because that's mitzvah derabanan. Benching deraisa, the bracha rishonim but derabanan. And Rabbi Yehuda, Omer mevarach lefneim l'achreim, he says, this is getting too far. He says, this whole thing is getting too far. Ezra meant to stop Talmud Torah, Dafka, but to lose mitzvah deraisa over this is too much. So we're going to say the bracha before and afterwards, even Shema and all the brachas. Benching all the brachas, we're not stopping any of that. Just Talmud Torah, a Melech Torah, that's what off limits we take the mikvah.
You said it seems pashtus that it's Maher Belibo. Where do you see that from?
Because it would be equivalent to Kriya Shema.
So you're saying the Balkari, that tefillahs, the Shema, that benching, he's still chayav to say. Okay, it's just the learning that he shouldn't be learning in that state.
Yeah, let me restate it to make sure it's clear. According to how the Bavli reads it, which is what I've said up to now, you are going to be thinking in your head the mitzvah, according to Tanna Kamma, the mitzvah, the rites of Shema and benching, that's Hirhor, and nothing on the brachas, before and after Shema, or the bracha before eating, because that's a derabanan. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Ezra only meant to exclude Talmud Torah proper, but these mitzvahs you sure have to do, even the derabanan. Okay, now, it doesn't sit well with us, I know, and it didn't sit with the Yerushalmi, the Gra, either. The Yerushalmi is a different reading, the Gra went like this, which is has its own problem. But I'll read it to you again. Look inside, it's exactly in the words. Just, you have to ignore the commas that your Mishnah has put in there. The reads, the Yerushalmi reads it like this. Balkeri mahar belibo ve'enu mavarach. He should, when it comes to brachas, he should think of those in his heart but not say them. Either before or not afterwards. But we're not mentioning anything about Kriya Shema, which the Yerushalmi takes as obvious. That, of course, you have to say. Just where you put the comma. Either it's, the problem with that reading, the difficulty is, so you're not talking about Shema at all. This one's right to brachas, which is difficult. But the girl goes that way anyways. So again, either it's Balkeri Mahar Belibo, implicitly he thinks the Shema, but he's Einu Mavarach, but doesn't say the brachas. And according to Yerushalmi, it's the Balkeri's Mahar Belibo Einu Mavarach. When it comes to brachas, he just simply thinks them, but doesn't say them. But of course, he should speak out the Kriya Shema itself in words. Interesting, right?
Is it interesting that Shulchan Aruch Harav Paskin is that Talmud Torah, you know, Yotze, which I mean, it's a Das Yachid. Unless you say
right, that's right.
Well, what do we consider halacha?
The halacha l'maisa is Tekhanas Ezra's is bakal. Halacha l'maisa. The no mikvah required after Kerry, no mikvah required. But in the words of Rav Lewis, when I asked Mishnah when I moved to Israel, and in Israel, many more people are machmir for it. I mean, in America, like not Hasidish, it's like sorry.
Hasidim.
Yeah, the Hasidim across the board, because they want that plus Tosefes Kedusha, they go to the mikveh every day, which ironically undermines the whole tikkun, right? Once you're going anyways, then what's the disincentive?
It's,
right? There's an issue, there's answers, but I'm saying it's but says Gadusha either way, but that's Hasidish. But not Hasidim in America, I think, no one kimat does it. In Eretz Yisrael, lots of people do. So I asked Rabbi Lindos when I moved here, what the Hanhaga? So he said, his words were, you would not be crazy to take it on. It would not be crazy to take it on. Yeah, it was people do it. It's not unheard of, not ridiculous, not. But it's, bottom line, it's not halachic obligation.
Can I pick on the maharer belibo? Is that the same as hirhur, or is there a different level?
Oh, I think it's the same thing.
Why does it say belibo? That's maharer.
I don't know.
Is there a difference? There might be eyeballing, and there might be belibo.
In other words, you're saying not even to think the word through, just to have the, just to, you know.
That, but that he can do, and
just to think, have kua.
Oh, that maybe. He can do.
Maybe. And
libo,
maybe
says
libo. Maybe that even be. Certainly, it's going to go
stronger.
There.
Libo is even stronger.
Well, it'll be less. And I think libo would, I think, would mean just think. Yes, Hashem's really there, and he's
right.
At God, as,
not,
a, as opposed to
not even
saying the words in your head. I don't know. Interesting. Certainly, that would be work well if you think here or kadib or dami. So at least all you're doing is just interesting. I didn't see it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But, very nice.
Good. Who's the author of this mission? Is it Ezra?
Oh no.
So how could we just say, okay, Ezra made a takana that we don't follow, but whoever wrote this halacha or this mishnah, he's telling us this is what we have to do.
That happens a lot in Mishnayos. So we have a basic principle, we don't pass on like Mishnayos. Right? Rebbe ordered how he wanted it, but he wasn't. Rebbe didn't. It's a bit of a halachic point, interesting meta halachic point, that Rebbe wasn't able to convene Rov HaChachamim. So he doesn't have the Mishnah doesn't have. That his decisions don't have the binding nature of like a Sanhedrin or Gadol, not binding on us. Even though the Mishnah itself is binding upon us because of Klal Yisrael accepting it, like the Shulchan Aruch, but it doesn't carry the weight of like a sin. If the Sanhedrin makes a psak, then there's no going against it anymore. You need another bigger, better Sanhedrin to undo it. But this Mishnah doesn't have that status because Rebbe there in Tzipor and Beis Shearim wasn't able to get everyone back together again. So the Mishnah often doesn't say the halacha, often. Right? Okay. It's interesting, Rebbe only very few times, but he says, like he says, Ani Omer, and I say, he's quoted, or Rebbe says, Rebbe is mentioned explicitly, maybe like 30 odd times the whole mission, it's very uncommon. He opines, but implicitly he's giving his opinion throughout, I suppose, on the Mahriya. Okay. Fine. Mishnah Hey. Paya Omer B'Tfila. Now, what happens if you're standing in prayer? He was standing in prayer. The Nizkar Shu Balkari. And in the mid prayer, you say, oh my gosh, I forgot that I'm Balkari. And we're going, that Balkari shouldn't be davening in the first place. So, Lo Yafsik, it's inappropriate to tell him to the Melech to stop short. Once you're davening, you need it anyways, it's Rachamim. Eli Yikatser, you should shorten his tefillah. What does that mean? It basically means you say the beginning and the end of each bracha. So, Ata Chonen Adam Das, Baruch Ata Hashem, Chonen Adas, and so on. So you just and he said there's the opening and the closing of each bracha to rush through it. Yeah. Fine. Now, a new point has nothing to do with Balkari anymore in the second part of the Mishnah here.
But that's not the halacha.
No, the halacha is you can daven as a Balkari.
If you were kavod by yourself.
But it might actually. I don't know what that Kabbalah, what weight it carries.
It's sort of
meant
there.
Yeah. I'm actually not sure. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Now, this next part of the mission deals with a different concept altogether, which is there's a pasuk that says, if I remember exactly, it says maybe you'll correct me. It says v'haya machnech kadosh or kodesh, and your machne should be kadosh, your encampment should be kadosh, and also I forgot the pasuk. V'yidlo yira lecha.
Ervas Dovar.
And he shouldn't be exposed to a Ervas Dovar. Let's loosely translate it as like a not nice thing, an obscene thing, something like that. Erva, of course, means like a nakedness. Okay? So the principle is that when it comes to Dovar Mishav Kedusha, Kriya Shema, Davening, Talmud Torah, you can't do it in either a place that's not Kadosh, dirty, filthy place, smelly place, and also you can't do it in front of an Erva, in front of nakedness. The whole world of halachas, but those are the principles going on here. And there's a separate principle, which is on top of that, when you say a davar shebe kedusha, your heart shouldn't see, quote unquote, your erva. It has to be something that divides between your upper body and your lower body. That's the gartel coming from that idea. And certainly, if you'd be wearing like a jalabiyah, one of these, you know, the Muslim nightgown outfits, you'd have to wear like a belt or something, la halacha, because is there nothing interceding between? But normally we have a belt and a pants, so trousers are not a problem. Either way, those are the principles in play here. So here's what happens. Remember we said that the Vasikin, the people who take mitzvah seriously, they want to say Kriya Shema before sunrise. So it's a very short amount of time. So here's the guy, Yarad Litbol, he went to the mikveh, he went, Yarad went down to do tevilah. He's in the mikveh there, and the mikveh itself is, yeah? Now, and he's naked, obviously. Im yachol la'alos, if he can get out, he can get up out of the mikveh, ulehis kasos, and cover himself, that's halacha, velikros, and then say kriya shema, ad shalo tane tzachama, before sun has sparked above the horizon. So then, yale, get up, but use kasa, cover yourself, and say it. What if you can't? You know, it's too long a process, time's too short.
Does that include having a bartol? Or just...
No, but you need to be fulfilling A, that your erva is covered, and B, there's something interesting. Also, you're wearing something covering your privates, and also there's something interceding between you.
So it says mitkase, it's including both of those, you're saying?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if that word actually implies it, but for sure the mission.
Just the pashtuns is because.
Yes, because that means to cover yourself. No, pashtuns is to cover yourself. Kisui, cover yourself.
But that would not imply that there's a gargle.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not yet. Yeah, it's not yet. It's not implying it, but I'm just saying it's there.
Okay.
So in other words, you have to put on your robe and also tie that sash or whatever. Okay. It's coming again this in a minute here because it says. Vim lav, what if you can't? Not enough time to get out of the mikvah and get dressed in time. So then, yiskase b'mayim v'yikra, cover yourself with the water and say kriya shema. Okay? So we're not talking about place. Yeah, so what does that mean? It means that you basically have half your body above the water and half your body below the water. So there's something dividing the two. And this is an important point, it can't be clear water. Either it has to be murky water, or you have to kick up the dirt to make it murky. So that's the issue of now your heart seeing your air. That's why I'm bringing it in here. That's the halacha. You can say kriya shema if you got it in the mikvah itself. Just kick up the dirt so that it's no longer transparent, the water. And you will say shema with the water being the dividing line between your higher body uncovered and your lower body, which is yes covered and divided and not seeing each other. Okay.
What's the ad shalom? I mean, before.
Because you have to say kriya shema a little before Nates, because that's the ideal time to say it. Everyone agrees, not just Rabbi Eliezer, that the ideal time to say shema before Nates, the Rambam brings it down. Everyone agrees. Everyone should know davening kavasikin is the halach preference. No doubt about it. That's missing the rule point. So, b'dieved, you're allowed to line later davening. My understanding is, for the record, that it's a relatively modern phenomenon that everyone's davening at Nates. The Vasika tried, there's a Gemara that says, Rabbi so and so, he once made it. He once got it just right and hit Nates as he went to Shimon Esrei, and he smiled the whole day long, he was so excited he finally pulled it off. It's a tricky business. I mean, now everyone's got a clock, and you know what's going to happen, and I'm looking at the horizon, he just watched the clock. But it's a relatively new phenomenon that everyone, so widespread. Okay. It takes a trick. The Rambam tries, he says, you have 6 minutes. He gives you 6 minutes between before Nates. I guess you have to know. I guess if you're used to seeing sunrise, you'll know that's about to happen based on the lightness outside. Either way, okay. Now, you got some problems because of Machanecha Kadosh. If it smells, Avalo Yiskasa Loba Maim Haroim, not with foul water, let's call it smelly water, because you can't say a Davish Kedusha in a smelly, the presence of something that smells. It smells putrid, garbage or whatever, dirty diaper and so on. Velo b'mei ha-mishra, and also not in soaking, literally water that's for soaking. They used to soak flax to prepare it for making linen, and I guess that process had a terrible odor to it. So you can't.
When you say dirty water, did it have to be something
that was foul smelling?
Because some water just smells nasty.
No, no good. If it smells nasty, it's you can't say creative one. Whatever it is. Oftentimes,
it's not an outside source, it could be the water itself.
Yeah, for sure. Oftentimes, it will happen, you walk into a room you're about to learn, and you say, hey, it kind of smells in here. And you know what the smell is? It's a problem to ascertain what's going on over there. But if this, bottom line, a smell, a smell that has no physical thing that it's emanating from, just a lingering smell, you could say, Adavash Mekadusha. Your most common example, of course, is you're davening and someone else passes gas around you. Okay, you don't have to stop for that, even though it stinks, right? But there's nothing there. There's no piece of excrement lying around. As opposed to, if there's a dirty diaper in the room, then the dirty diaper is the source of foulness. that you'd have to know. This is yourself from where the smell ends for almost.
Well, if you throw it outside, it, you could daven right away.
That's right. Smell as long as it's on the side, of a wall, whatever it is. That's right. If you smell it, you gotta get away from it. So this water smells. So you can't say Shema there. So I always had a kasha. Maybe you think of the kasha yourself. It said may. It says my marad, stinky water is no good. Then it says may a mishra, soaking water, because it stinks. So I was wondering what's there. Yeah. So I'll tell you, Rav Spetner told me. I forgot his first name. I still have mine. Anyone remember his first name? Spetner. Okay. From Berkowitz is called. I asked him his kasha, and he thought about it long and hard. He came back. I don't know who he asked. He had it's amazing halachic insight. He said that may mishra, of course it stinks, but everyone is used to the smell. So they didn't think, what's the big deal already, once you're used to it, so they didn't count it. So it's saying, no, if it's objectively bad, it doesn't matter, it's not bothering you anymore. So I think, now you have to go ask a rabbi if you work on a farm, let's say, but I find you walk on a farm, the whole place smells like a refuse, it smells like a manure pile. I don't know how you can function. I don't think it matters, because the farmer doesn't bother them. Even if you go to the farm after a few hours, you're used to the smell, and that's that. If it's true, what Spetner was saying, then you've done Eel Spetner. Then you have a... Then you have a problem. That's what you want to explain. I think it's true. Otherwise, it's a very difficult mission. Okay.
There's a menu. There's a kibbutz that's near here, Shav, and it's a big catering hall. Everyone goes to their customers there, and 500 people, and it smells. So it's obviously in the cover of the community to go there for chuppah and.
At least you have to ask a real rabbi, but right? But. Tell the commissioner saying it's a problem. Should be. You're freezing.
Is it cold in here?
No, yeah.
All right.
I'm also,
even I'm freezing. No, and I'm.
I think it could be not hot, but doesn't have to be cold. They said
this room was either hot or.
No, yes, it was perfect. Yes, it was
perfect. Let's heat it up.
Right? Okay.
Heat it up.
Okay. So you have 12 minutes. I don't know what to say. Okay. Fine. Good. Okay. Now the next mission is our first example. It's called a chasuri mechzera. Okay, I'm telling you ahead of time now. If you've not heard this before, it's only going to bother you. What can I do? It means that something's missing from the mission. There are words missing from the mission. Okay? Words missing. As you can imagine, that the Mefarshim explained, did it on purpose, didn't do it on purpose. They obviously didn't correct it once they found the missing words. You're about to run into a chasuri mechzera, so before I translate the next words, I want to tell you, there's words missing from the Mishnah, so you're going to say, where does it say that? I'm going to tell you, it doesn't, okay? But maybe it's a whole shiur to itself, why and what. The Gra definitely said it's on purpose, for Kabbalistic reasons, for sure he went that way.
For censorship reasons?
For Kabbalistic reasons. Uh-huh. The Mishnah is read the way it reads, and like the fact that words missing didn't bother Rebbe at all. Like, he had the other agenda. Yeah. Either way, the words read like this. I'll read the sentences again. Avalo yiskas alo b'mayim haroim. You can't cover yourself in what's called smelly water, foul water. Lo b'mayim mishra, and not in soaking water. Ad shiyatul sochan mayim, until you pour into them water. Yeah, what they're referring to? That's referring to being in the presence of urine. If you're in the presence of urine, so you have to pour water to dilute the urine. So that means, if, like, for example, there's one urination amount on the floor, whatever that is. So then one person went on the floor, you have to pour in Revius water to dilute that water before you can say Shema. If there are two people went to the toilet there, you need to pour in two Reviuses to put water inside.
But this, it looks like this being said in the context of...
I know, that's why I told you what. Sorry, Mechzera, the words are missing. But it's referring to being the presence of urine.
In general,
urine?
Being in the presence of urine.
Yeah.
In general.
Yeah. Nothing to the mikvah, necessarily. You're okay. Walking in an alley and you're saying, want to say Shema, and someone went to the toilet, but you can't.
You're saying that Ad Shiyatil Vatochan Mayim is referring to?
Yeah, you have to pour a revius of water into the urine puddle.
So we should put a period after the word, but maybe I'm sure we should just put a period?
I guess so, but then you've got just a dangling half a sentence there. The sentence then just reads until you put water into it. Well, what? Until what?
Because I'm saying, as far as the idea of
that still stands. Yeah, for sure.
Period.
Yeah.
And then we'll put it.
And then the unwritten words are, and what about a puddle of urine? And the answer is, okay. You can't say anything there. Picks up Ad Shiyatlos Ofan Mayim.
But that could refer to Mayim Arayim also.
No, but it isn't. You're puddle of urine in bad water.
But you can dilute Mayim Arayim.
I don't think one
revise
is
going to
cut it.
No, not a revise, but you can dilute it.
I think, yeah.
It doesn't say how much.
It says impractical.
Here it doesn't say how much.
It says it's impractical.
I mean, if you can make this swell disappear.
Here, that's here.
If you can make the swell disappear, so good. But, I mean, it's a...
Yeah, that's Meir Adonai. That's what he's referring to. I'm saying it could go on.
If it smells, it smells. End of story.
Yeah.
You're
going to
turn the heat to cold up for us?
I'll
probably come. Okay. Okay, fine. Yeah. Okay, good. We have to keep on going. Fine. Now, v'kama yarchik mehem, how far do you have to distance yourself from them? Them referring to the unmentioned urine.
Yeah.
Urine puddle. How far do you have to go away from the urine puddle? Uminatsoa, and also fecal matter. Arba amos. It's four amos. There's a machlokas, if it means from four amos from the actual feces itself, or from where the smell ends. And the lacha, bottom line, it's four amos from the smell ends, which can be far, far away, obviously. So you have a dirty diaper which is not lying there in the garbage and it smells, you got to distance yourself four almost from where the smell of it ends, which could be far.
Yeah. And he's saying sideways, not front.
Okay, there's a separate... Okay, good. Okay, fine. Yeah, there's a separate issue. We're talking about smell up to now. Now, if you can see the fecal matter, no go. You can't daven looking at feces. And it's not an issue of smell. If you can see it, it's in your eye view, you can't say it. So when it says, let's study, what it means is, if you don't see it, but you still smell it. If you do see it, all bets are off. You have to cover it up. Okay, or whatever, look the other way, and not smell it. Okay? Yeah.
It's Arba from where the smell ends, or just Arba from the source of...
So that is a machlokas, but I'm telling you, halach lemaisa, which is it means from where the smell ends. And that's how we go. Smell ends. It's far. I mean, potentially far. Okay. Now, we talked about a Roa Carey, one who's had a seminal emission, so he is, because of Tchadas Ezra, which the mission is going like in this mission here, he can't be involved in the Davar Shiv Kedusha, leading out Rabbi Yehuda, davening and Krishma, and so. That applies, as you'll see from the submission, to women also. That's a little-known fact, I guess, right? To come in contact, physical contact, with semen is a big enough... That's part of Ezra's takana. And therefore, if a woman is a mishameshes, she's recently been with her husband and she came in contact with the semen, or if she's a poletashech lazera, it's now come out of her, even like a day or two, up to 3 days later, so that recontacting her makes her into like a, I can't call her Balas Keri, but the point is that she's got the problem of being in contact with semen, and therefore she's going to have to go to the mikvah if she wants to do Davar Shiv Kedusha like him also. There's no other way to read the Mishnah, even though I think people are like, whoa, no one ever mentioned that one to me. What can I tell you? I had the same thought, but that's how it is. So now, the question is going to be, what's going to be like this? If a person has two competing tumas, and going to the mikvah will only get rid of one of them. Does he have to go for both in the case of the Baal Keri? So I'll see inside now. First case is a Zav. Zav is a man. Zavah is a woman. Zav is a man who has like an emission out of him. The Arch scroll translated as like an uncommon or unusual seminal emission. My read of the Gemara there, Nida, is that it's not semen necessarily.
Blood.
Sorry?
Blood.
No, no, it's not blood. No, it's like it looks like whitish, but it looks like, I don't know what, it looks like, the Gemara uses a mashal and like a egg whites and beet egg whites, and so it's not blood, it's definitely some fluid, but the article says it's like unusual semen or something like some lashon. By me, it seems Zav is some other emission. You often see translated into Sunstino, if I remember correctly, translated as a gonorrheal emission. I don't know if it's pus, I don't know what it is, but whatever it is, it's not blood.
But it's associated with lack of help, usually, right?
It's a tuma. It's a source of tuma. Whatever causes it, it's, here's the point. It doesn't come as an ejaculate. It doesn't come out from an avrachai, from an erection. It oozes out of you. So it's unhealthy. It's not a good situation. It's not as it's not a seminal emission. It's like some oozing out of you. Whatever the fluid is the fluid. But the point is, and it's called zav. Now, if you see it, if a man sees such a thing twice, he's now tamei, and it's a 7-day tumah. That's the point, okay? After seeing it twice, he's got a 7-day tumah on his hands. He has to count the 7 days. Women are a zava, has it's in the blood. I don't get into that world right now. But the point is, it's a similar 7-day counting thing. And if you have the third time, bring a korban also. Either way, after 2 times of seeing it, he now has to wait 7 days to become tahor. So what happens if in day 3, he also is roa keri? So now he's tamei already, and he's now also a baal keri. So now what's he going to... Question is, does he have to go to the mikvah to get rid of the... For Ezra, get rid of the keri, even though, as far as tumah tahor goes, that doesn't help him anything. He's a zav, is a very strong... severe source of tumor. It doesn't help, and well, carries very life form. That's the question. So what in such a case, or another case, we'll have 3 cases here. Anida, similar, she's also Tamei, of course. Shepalta shichva zera. So we're going to ask the kind of the not difficult question. Well, how could she be a paleta shichva zera? How could semen come out of her if she's Anida? The answer is okay. So on Monday she was with her husband, on Tuesday she became Anida, and on Wednesday it came out of her. Not so complicated.
What's Shepalta?
Palet means to spit out, literally, to emit.
Emit.
You have the lashon, for example, by kashrus. You say when you want to kashrus, you have to get the bliya's absorption to be to palet, expel them. So she's paletes, right? So what? Again, similar question. Or a misha meshes, even the other way, which is even a bigger fetish. She's a misha meshes, so she first touched semen, which would now make her need to go to the mikvah, right? And then she was Ras and Nida, then she could Nida. The reason that's even a bigger Kiddush is going to be because, like, she could have fixed herself up and didn't. She missed an opportunity. That's even a bigger Kiddush.
Yeah.
Because if she would have gone to the mikvah, she would have actually rid herself totally of Tumah and become Tahor before the new Tumah of Nida set in. In all those cases, Sarich and Tevila, the Tanakhama says, Ezra said, you got to do it. It's nothing to do with Tumah and Tahara. You got to go to the mikvah because you go to the mikvah. It doesn't have to do with, you know, becoming Tahor all over again. And Rabbi Yehuda says, forget it. Rabbi Yehuda, we see it as make one. It's kind of as the whole way through, says, no, you don't have to go. Fine. Very good.